Welcome to the Morning Philip series, co-sponsored with the Bush Foundation and the New Mad Group, hosted at the Garage. The purpose of the Morning Philip series is to discuss philanthropy, civil society, and community. It is an opportunity to have a conversation with good people, doing good things creatively and collaboratively. The format is a conversation, not a presentation, a dialogue, not a pitch. Two chairs, a table, and a community of interested people. And today we are pleased to have with us a practitioner of grateful living, a cancer survivor, an author, a world traveler. The New Mad Group would like to extend a special thanks to the Cheeseman Center and Wes Brown for sound, South Dakota Public Broadcasting for recording, Scott with Sumner Law for brewing coffee, Brad for helping him brew the coffee, Barefoot Dance Studio for chairs, Ted for setup, the members of the Garage co-working space for allowing us to use your office, the Bush Foundation, and for everyone here for joining us at 7 a.m. A special thanks to Colleen Dunnigan, a friend from college who is hiding somewhere in the back.
Way back there.
For making the introduction to Christy and helping make this possible. For further information about what goes on at the Garage, please follow us on Facebook. Check out the Garage website. Live tweet today at #MorningPhilip. Now with all that, please join me in welcoming Christy Nelson. Christy, can we start off by...
meditating? Okay.
That would be a first.
Okay.
Before we do that, how about describing what grateful living is?
Oh, was that me? So, you notice I love to take my time to answer and be thoughtful about it, and it's also such a great way to be present. So grateful living is a way of life that maximizes our ability to experience gratefulness as an orientation to life. So grateful living is a way that we practice. It's about a moment-to-moment way of being. And it's riddled with deep noticing of what's so in our lives. We have to be present in order to be able to do that. So slowing down enough to notice what's here and what's around us, that's a key part. Looking around, having perspective, looking for perspective sometimes, because life isn't always delivering to us the things that we think should make us grateful. And then going for opportunities and possibilities, creating possibilities that actually impact the world from that place. It's not just a passive way of being. Grateful living is active, so it's an active way of being and has a ripple effect out in the world, changes the world when we live gratefully.
Would you take us back to your first experience or realization that this was a way that you wanted to live and dedicate your life and through your work? Would you bring us to that point, that first memory?
Sometimes the job shows up when you're 100% ready but completely unprepared. So on the inside I was ready, but I wasn't looking for this particular work. It resonated so deeply with what I knew was important, and that is, I'm going to say, ineffable. So there's a lot that we talk about in this conversation that feels like it's almost beyond words. So sometimes we use our hands, sometimes we use our faces, sometimes we have to sit, sometimes we cry. Grateful Living invited me as a stage 4 cancer survivor. It was the only way I knew how to live once I made it through treatment. And I kept thinking I was going to die, and I kept not dying. And so I couldn't figure how else to live but gratefully. So I was like, am I going to take this day for granted? No. Am I going to take this moment for granted? No. So, you know, there's that whole kind of thing that happened, which is, imagine you have a year to live. Stephen Levine wrote a bunch of books, Imagine You Have a Year to Live. I didn't have to imagine it. I knew what it was like in a very lived experience kind of way. And it impacted me hugely. It wasn't philosophical, it wasn't conjecture. It was, what do you do except for to seize that carpe diem, seize every moment, make everything count, let everybody know who you love, that you love them. And I kind of call it regret reduction. So you really, if you live gratefully, you are reducing your regrets. I'm telling you 100%. If you live today 100% gratefully, you're going to have so many fewer regrets. And if you live tomorrow gratefully, boom. Like when you go, finally, all of us go, you've got so little to lament. So in that living gratefully after surviving cancer, I was always looking for things that resonated with me. And I got very involved in Vipassana meditation, spiritual practices, mindfulness practice was a big part of my life, and I worked in that. And it didn't fulfill the whole enchilada for me. There was part of the enchilada, big time, still waiting. And that had to do with gratefulness and gratitude, and I knew it as soon as the invitation came.
The organization that you're the executive director for, A Network for Grateful Living, mm-hmm. is founded by a Catholic Benedictine monk, mm-hmm. Brother David. Mm-hmm. Would you introduce Brother David to this group this morning?
He is the most, he is, Brother David lived through the Second World War, survived very active bombing in his country, in Europe, and came out of that experience seeking something. He said, I came to the United States to either find the perfect girl when he was in his 20s or the perfect monastery. The road left him, I'm so sorry. Well, no, I'm not. He did exactly what he was, but I was like, so many women love this man. It's just, so what he did was he became a monk and then became beloved by a bazillion women. And I always like to say I have a monk crush on Brother David. He's 92 years old. He is full of joy and spirit and effervescence, and he's an embodiment of grateful living. And what took him down the path of monk versus married was finding the perfect monastery in Elmira, New York, outside Ithaca. But also, it took him to being a Benedictine monk, because Saint Benedict has this beautiful saying, keep death always before your eyes. So actually the saying is kind of keep death daily before your eyes. And that saying took Brother David down the path to monasticism and to being in the order of Saint Benedict, and in a very particular kind of order, in that that was the practice he wanted to live. And he went into deep study because of that. And it resonated for him that one of the reasons why he experienced joy was all the days he didn't die in the bombing, in the war, there was a joy in surviving every minute of almost dying. And I resonate with that so deeply. That was part of what the draw was for me as well. So that saying of Saint Benedict took him into the Benedictine faith. And then in his deep contemplation in the monastery, he wrote, one of his first books was Gratefulness, the Heart of Prayer. And what he determined that's very powerful is that at the core of all religions, and he says, like, if you dig deep enough into any one religion, you find all religions, you find faith in some way. At the core of all religions was gratefulness. And that book is what turned it around, and he started living his life more outside of the monastery and became an award-winning interfaith dialogue person who was committed to interfaith dialogue. He was one of the first people who was granted permission to study Zen Buddhism by the Vatican. He started building bridges to Judaism and to rabbis, and was very active around the peace movement, and Thich Nhat Hanh became a very close friend, and a lot of other major spiritual leaders. So he's an extraordinary intellectual man, a deeply spiritual man, and a kick to be around. He's committed to play and joy as much as anything. He believes that reclaiming our essence as children is also one of those things, that children are essentially grateful. Very young children, until we learn to be cranky, which happens pretty quickly.
You speak of keeping death in sight. You talk about living in the woods, as you described it. Would you share with us a little bit about that this morning?
Mm-hmm. So, after I was done with all of my treatment, there was the head of oncology at the hospital where I was being treated suggested that I have my bone marrow harvested. And I had just gone through 2 years of treatment. And I was like, for a bone marrow transplant. And it seemed unimaginable to me that I would need to do that at this stage after what I had just been through. And I said to him, I'm not going to live. I'm going to live inside hope. I don't want to live inside this idea that I have to keep doing anything and everything to try to prevent this recurrence and then deal with stuff and live my life as if this is going to come back. And I said, you know, when will I be out of the woods? And he said, you'll never be out of the woods. And I said, well, then I had better learn to love the woods. I'd better befriend the woods. Because that's where we're all living, is the woods. When are any of us ever going to be out of the woods? Who knows? The great, great mystery of all life is when that dash is going to get a number after it on our headstone. You know, it's like starts here, ends here, and everything in between is the dash. So living that dash to the completeness is really what I love. And I try to live as if there is no promise. One of my deep principles and the principles of grateful living is to take nothing for granted and live as if nothing is promised you. Because that's radical. So taking nothing for granted and living as if nothing is promised you leaves us deep in the woods, and the most exquisite, acute way of living on the point of the moment, and that is it. What do we have? We take so much for granted, this idea that we've got a trajectory ahead of us, that we can do all those other things and love all those other people later, that we can be who we really are tomorrow, later today, when nobody knows what's going to happen. So live it fully now. So that's, to me, keeping death before my eyes is the paradoxical way of living my biggest life. If I stay aware of my mortality, a little emotional, every day, which I feel is the responsibility of having survived the cancer I survived, and it's the way that I honor all the people who are no longer here, who I know and have loved, who had cancer, is to live it full tilt. And if I live that way, then I feel like I've done the bit that I can of saying, whenever it is that I go, I will have lived fully.
Thanks.
Mm-hmm. Oh, thank you. Thank you.
You just shared Brother David, his study, digging deeper and deeper into mainstream religions, that at the core of those religions is gratefulness. Mm. Brother David also talks about that there's a universal desire or attempt by individuals that's happiness. Mm-hmm. Could you bring those together for us? Could you talk about those two and how mainstream religions diving deeper are connected through gratefulness? Mm-hmm. Religions here to serve and to be a tool for humans, for people living today, and individuals are seeking happiness. Mm.
Okay, contemplate this question with me, and together we'll come up with a great answer. So one of Brother David's most famous quotes is, and it's somewhat alluded to here, but it's misquoted a million times, but who cares if something fabulous is misquoted, if it retains its essence? It is not gratefulness that makes us happy. No, excuse me. Okay, ready? Mulligan. Back. Edit that one out. It is not happiness that makes us grateful. It is gratefulness that makes us happy. I always start with gratefulness because that's where I start all the time, right? So it is not happiness that makes us grateful, it's gratefulness that makes us happy. And I think that alludes to this deep place that Brother David believes we are all longing. We're longing for something that he actually calls joy. In his TED Talk, he calls it happiness, and he'll refer to it as happiness. But happiness, he sees as conditional and temporary and ephemeral. And if someone were to ask you, are you happy? I don't know what happens to you, but a lot of stuff goes on inside me. And I think, am I happy? Should I be happier? Was I happier? Am I as happy as the other person? All this weird internal dialogue of, in our society, maybe I should be happier. So happy is kind of a charged word. And the pursuit of happiness just gives me agita, because it feels like it's something that's always out there that we're supposed to be getting better and better at, and other people have a better idea of it and everything. So to me, the longing is actually for deep joy. Joy, Brother David says, and you're each going to get a little card when you leave here, joy is the gratitude. No, excuse me. So funny. I can speak, and then when I go to quote something, which is what half my job is, it's going to say, okay, joy is the happiness that doesn't depend on what happens. Okay? So happiness is a highly dependent state. It's we're wanting things to be lined up the way we want them to be lined up. Gratefulness is the gratitude that doesn't depend on what happens. These are the, so you can see the common ground here. So happiness and gratitude live in a realm which we're pursuing. They're conditional, they're circumstantial. We think that the external world is what provides those things to us. Gratefulness and joy live in the deep wellspring that is constantly nourished and can nourish us by life, depending on how we approach it. But for him, I think that's why he's saying it's the connecting ground for all spiritual life, because it's the connecting ground for what truly matters. If keeping death before our eyes makes us grateful, and this deep longing, then spirituality, and I'm going to use the word spirituality more than religion, we consider ourselves a spiritual organization. Many people come to our work from many different faith backgrounds and secular backgrounds and scientific backgrounds. It's not all about religion, but that deep wellspring is filled up by how we live our lives. Gratefulness and joy are the self-filling reservoir that we can tap into anytime. That's the deepest core of spiritual and what I would call belonging. So that sense of belonging, when we feel that deep joy and gratefulness, we feel inherent belonging, a sense of connectedness that transcends, again, our circumstances. So I think that's what he's speaking to. as well as I can say it right now, and you know, mm-hmm. offer you a couple of misquotes along the way, and we're going to have a great time.
Thanks. Will you talk a little bit about the organization and the tools that are present mm-hmm. on the website?
Yeah. So we are a Network for Grateful Living is a 501c3 nonprofit organization that was founded, co-founded by Brother David in about the year 2000. And it was founded as a website where people could go to access Brother David's teachings. And which is a great idea, you know, otherwise people would need to have access to him. And as he got into his 80s, so he was, you know, close to 80 years old when he founded an online organization, which is pretty radical, and pretty prescient of him to see into the future and know how critically important this was going to be. And also, he was encouraged by people who love his work, make this available to more people, make this available in perpetuity, so when you're not here, and lucky for us, he keeps being here, but so they built what's called, we call it an online sanctuary. It's gratefulness.org. You got to spell gratefulness right or you're not going to get there. And if you go to gratitude.org, you get something completely different. So gratefulness.org, and it's an online sanctuary to support grateful living. And it's an online sanctuary to support offline living. That's what Brother David loves to call it. You only go online not to live there, even though I spend way too much time online building my online sanctuary for offline living for other people. But it's really true. So this is an online sanctuary where people go. We have people who go every single day. There are meditation videos, audios. We have something called Light a Candle, which was, again, a prescient. So Light a Candle was something that was developed in the early years of a Network for Grateful Living's website. And 9/11 happened not long after this tool was built, where you can go online and light a candle. It's a kind of a meditative practice for people. And it just took off in 9/11, and people started promoting it. And then funeral homes started listing it on their websites. When someone died, you could go and light a candle. So right now, 23 million candles have been lit in the past 15 years or so, a little more than 15 years, by people who are going to remember a loved one, focus their intentions for the day, whatever. It's a beautiful ritual. We have e-cards that are super cool, and people love them because they're not flashy. Everything's free. Everything's free. We're fulfilling our mission of being a nonprofit organization and offering everything to everybody. And lots of blogs and articles and an online journal, a free online gratitude journal where you can go every day. And then we have a... a word for the day, which is a quote, which I'll offer you a couple and probably say I'm wrong, and then a daily question for reflection. Because what we know is that grateful living is a really powerful practice. It's also a fragile practice unless we practice it constantly. So we get out into the, you know, I sit and I have my really grateful moments and I feel really grateful and I go outside and someone cuts me off in my car, and I am not going to tell you the kinds of things that I think and say. And then so it's like I have to come back. So what it does is it creates a reference point where we return. The idea is not I'm grateful every moment of the day. The idea is to remember about being grateful more than we forget, and to have a place to return our awareness, just like mindfulness. You're not mindful every moment of every day. That's a tyranny. We're human beings, or we're spiritual beings having a human experience, whatever you want to call it. We're human beings having a spiritual. We're human beings going through life, and things are challenging, things are difficult. We lose our way. We need those breadcrumbs to find our way back. And our website is a host of grateful breadcrumbs. I've never said that before, and hopefully that's an okay thing to say, but leading you back to the sanctuary of your own remembering that gratefulness matters and living this way really matters because you take nothing for granted. You live your heart on your sleeve. You say yes. You show up fully. And life is better.
You mentioned a word of the day.
Yeah.
Quote.
Yeah.
Is there a quote that, is there a favorite quote, a quote that you want to share this morning? A favorite?
That I can actually remember. It's a really short one. So this is what comes to mind. Oh gosh, there's so many. Now I'm thinking of so many. Can I have two?
Sure.
Okay. Wherever you are is the entry point. That is Kabir, I believe. That was our word for the day a couple of days ago, so it's really easy for me to remember. We have one every day. So wherever you are is the entry point. And then another one is how you do anything is how you do everything. So that's a big one by Sherry Huber, who's an American Zen teacher. And how you do anything is how you do everything for me is about you don't get to have the places where you show up and then the exceptions to that. Here's how I am and with whom I am my best. Here's when I live my values and principles and oh, I get these little exception areas over here. We are always who we are and it always counts and it always matters. And integrity is about living those principles and our deep commitments 100% of the time. So I love that quote, how you do anything is how you do everything, because that's a big calling home. That's one of those challenging places to live our lives. But it brings us back. Again, it's about always coming back. So when we veer off, boy, is this how I want to be witnessed? Like, it's if a tree falls in the forest, does anyone hear it? If I act this way, does anybody notice? Yes, everything matters. Bring it back. Bring it back to our core values. Bring it back to our principles, our deepest commitments. Everything matters, and nothing is an exception. Is a beautiful way to live because it means living in that principled way all the time. Yeah.
In a society that's constantly going and bombarded with voices and news and more, the pace that seems, how do you keep up? You talk about materialism. I'm wondering if you share with us today a bit about how you look at being content and how do you do that in a world that turning off cell phones for a meeting
an hour right now
or wanting to make sure you're in the know all the time or you're responding so much. How do you find contentment? How do you find the space to practice this way of living?
It's a great question. You ask great questions. I only met him yesterday. So it brings to mind a headline I saw this morning called instead of FOMO, the fear of missing out, which drives us in our lives all the time, JOMO, the joy of missing out. What do you want to say about that?
No, I was going to say FOMO, and then I was like, I don't know if I'm going to say that. You just did.
FOMO. So instead of FOMO, live your JOMO. And that means doing what really matters to each of us and boy, so this is a paradoxical question that you're asking for me, because when you trust that life is short and precious, when you know that deep in your heart, and that's the source of so much of my or your or our operating system, how we go through life. There's a profound paradox, which is I want to be everywhere, all the time, with everyone I love, doing everything I love constantly. Guess what? Impossible. But there's an urgency that I experience in my inner, in my body. It's actually somatic. It's actually in my nervous system that I work with a sense of the limitation of time. And when we work in that way, it takes tremendous fortitude to be exactly here, exactly now, nowhere else, slow down, present, available for this, nothing else, content, here, with what we have. It's radical. And we have the messages that I say are coming from this consumer society constantly, which is in order to be enough, we need more. And you need new, and you need better, and the grass is greener, and there's always something else, and gosh darn it, you should go buy it. And yet we know in our heart of hearts that all of those things are ephemeral. All of those things, you have a house fire, and all the things that you thought mattered to you are gone. So getting out of that loop, the hamster wheel, off the hamster wheel, off the hamster wheel, and slowing down enough to notice and to say, I can only do this now, and that's actually the root of my deepest contentment. It's not about doing more. Contentment doesn't live outside of where I am and who I am. Contentment lives here. What if this is all there is? How do I live it so fully? And it's a very poignant deliberation for me. I told Matt I might cry. So poignancy, when you're living poignantly, when I'm living poignantly, I'm always aware of being in the midst of meaningful experience, aware of the limitation of time. That's the definition of poignancy, which means that life is poignant if you're living it meaningfully. That's a heavy-duty thing to grok. If you're feeling poignant, you're probably right on that cutting edge of grateful living. When you feel that open, broken-hearted, wildly passionate vulnerability, when you feel like you're beyond words, when you feel like there's no Instagram post or Facebook post that's going to capture how grateful you feel, you're on it. It's that deep. And so I think you ask a very powerful, paradoxical question, because how not to be urgent in the face of knowing that time is limited is a very intensely deep practice, and how not to be susceptible to the outside messages that there's more out there waiting for you that could make you more joyful. That's a constant practice to actually come back to home in ourselves, to resist all the messaging that says happiness is something you pursue and it's out there and you need another reason for gratitude, so you better go get something external. Whereas gratefulness and joy are really an inside job. And they're not conditional on any of those things or even the experiences. So I'm gonna just read this JOMO this morning. So this is hot off the press sharing with you, and it's really resonant to my own heart. So I'm gonna leave here. It's gonna be one of my Rapid City new orientations, is what if there's a joy of missing out? Yo, the cell phone's clicking away, the news reels are coming in, opportunities and invitations are happening, lots of other things I could do. I have total JOMO right now.
What role has a mentor played in your life?
So what comes to mind immediately is how many I've had. So mentors is what rings for me. And all my life, having people who modeled a way of being that was inspiring to me. And how many different shapes and sizes and boxes and, you know, mentors, it's so wild to imagine. People come in packages that we don't expect. So I love the idea of having mentors and role models who are absolute delicious and discombobulating surprises, you know, that we're disarmed by our mentors. And so I've had lots of those people. And the second thing that came to mind when you asked that question is some of my very, two of my very dearest friends have died of cancer. One of them this year. And watching, I think we have a lot to learn from people who die with their hearts open and teach us about what it's like to live. So that, what comes to mind is right now my friend Paula, who died in January. So, and sometimes mentors come into our lives ever so briefly. You know, a mentor is not somebody who necessarily sticks around for decades. Sometimes I've had people who have changed my life who I've met only for a few hours, and conversations have been such that I was entirely changed by them. That's, again, about, are you available for that possibility in your life, that this package, this person standing in front of you this moment, could be everything you need?
Would you share what is the piece of advice or that maybe a mentor has shared with you that you walk with every day? Is there something that one of these mentors has provided that sticks with you?
So it's not a message, but it's, I'm trying to take an essence. So this might have to be a quote that goes on our website now, because I'm just making it up. Okay, let's see. Somebody can write it down.
We're recording.
Yeah, good, okay. The most important thing in my life is to deeply care about other people, but to not care what they think about me. So that's, I don't know if anybody else can relate to, hopefully I'm not the only one. So if I deeply care for you, but if you're the one person in the room who looks like they don't grok what I'm saying or get what I'm saying, that I don't have this gravitational pull to like, oh, I've got to make sure that you understand me. And so that temptation in life to give our energy toward where we may be being disapproved of. So care like crazy, but don't care what people think. Care like crazy. That's from the heart. Caring what people think is the ego. So for me, that's a little bit of the, it's a great tension to be in. That's a great place to live. It's a constant, all this stuff is a constant practice. You don't, anybody who's perfected this stuff, I haven't met them. But it's about remembering a little bit more than you forget every day. Just one more moment. I loved when Jon Kabat-Zinn, who was one of my mentors, he's been somebody I've known for a long time. And you're trying to practice mindfulness, you're sitting, you're meditating. Anybody meditate ever? Raise your hand. Ever tried to meditate? Okay, good. Okay. Anybody meditate every single day without fail for 45 minutes impeccably? I'm so glad I'm in Rapid City. Okay, I'm with the right group. So Anybody who says they do, I'm so suspicious. So I remember sitting, and it was 45 minutes of sitting and just, you know, relatively torturous, ostensibly blissful, you know, this 45 minutes going by and just witnessing my mind and thinking, I am never going to get this down. You know, this is so hard, and how am I ever going to get so that I don't have a thought? And then I remember Jon Kabat-Zinn saying, it's not about not having thoughts. It's about beholding your thoughts, releasing your thoughts, and maybe becoming an expert in mindfulness is having one single more mindful moment each day than you had the day before. One moment. I was like, okay, now I've got it. Now I can figure that out. One more mindful moment than the day before. And maybe gratefulness and grateful living are the same. One more grateful moment, one more grateful interaction, one more grateful remembering today than I had yesterday. And it's great to be in a practice that there's no such thing as perfecting. I can't remember the question you asked, but I enjoyed that riff.
along those lines, meditation or what are, or do you have particular rituals or practices that you participate in every day to practice this way of life?
Yes.
What are some examples of those practices or rituals? Are they, do you, yeah, what so, are those examples?
Thank you. And again, every moment is an opportunity. And there are certain moments that are great markers in our day. So David White, does anybody know David White's poetry? Okay, check him out. W-H-Y-T-E. So David White says, the office of, and you could say prayer, but the office of the sacred, it's not a good, this is what I say about what he says. The office of the sacred is most open at a new dawn. So the moments when we first arrive into our day are really critical moments for setting a tone. So this is one of my practices. How much time do we have?
I have no idea.
Are you nervous about that?
No.
Should I be?
No.
Okay. Somebody will tell me when it's like 8:30 and we've way gone beyond. I'm having such a good time. So the office of the sacred is most open at a new dawn. How we greet our day really matters. And also it's said in science, which I can't quote many research studies, but I know how we end our day also matters because it also helps influence how you greet your day. So before I get out of bed in the morning, and I try to do this every single morning, as soon as I wake up, this means I absolutely I'm terrible at remembering my dreams because the thing you're supposed to do when you first wake up is go write down your dream, remember your dream. So I was in a dream group for 5 years. I almost never remembered a dream. But I had so much fun. I enjoyed the group so much. But the first thing I do every morning is I come to consciousness, and before I get out of bed, sometimes before I open my eyes, I think of 5 things I'm grateful for. Before I'm awake, even, all the way fully awake. Why is that important, do you think? Nothing has happened yet. When you go to bed at night and you write down 3 things that you have gratitude for, or 5 things you have gratitude for, it's like, this great thing happened, this great thing, you know, this person gave me this great thing, this person was nice to me. Gratefulness lives in the awareness that life is actually a gift. That we're to be alive today, whoa, amazing, miraculous. Who knew? Who said? Who promised it? Nobody. This is a miracle, right? So it's on some level to wake up every day. And I really live with that acuteness, that acute awareness. So I wake up and I'm like, okay, I'm alive, yay. that's one thing. And I literally, it is that feeling of waking up to another day. Wow, all the things my body did overnight to keep me alive. If you want to be in shock and awe and in absolute overwhelming gratitude all the time, if you want to live gratefully all the time, think about your body. Learn about your body. Research your body. Freak out about your body. It is doing things all the time. It is, I read these statistics. I'm writing a book, so I just wrote a book called, see if I can remember the title, Treasuring the Body as It Is, An Intimate Terrain for the Extraordinary. That's a good chapter title. You wake up in the morning, you say, thank you, lungs. You kept me alive all night long. My lungs breathed without my having to try. I got to rest, and my lungs kept me alive all night long. My heart kept me alive all night long. I'll wake up, and sometimes I'll say, I had a really cool dream. I can't remember it, but I had a really cool dream. The air temperature is amazing. I've got these sheets. I've got a pillow. I wake up, and I just kind of, I go into that sense of, and often I try to just hold, the last of the five is almost always, I am loved. I may not have a name in mind or a person in mind, but I have that sense of I'm loved. So that's one thing that I do every day. And then sometimes with my partner at night, if we're really in a good role, five things we're grateful to each other for before bed. To each other for. You want to change your relationship forever? Try that one. It's a really good one. Or with somebody you love, five things that... Every single day, someone with whom you work. Five things I noticed today. Little things. I noticed that you did this. I noticed that you did that. I'm really grateful that you were considerate of me in this way. I was watching you deal with the person who pumped the gas, and I was really marveling at how kind you were. Or I noticed that you were... You sent me this amazing email today, and that really meant, so out loud too. So those are two different ways. One is in our hearts, starting every day with what does it mean to wake up gratefully, and then making sure at some point during the day, we're really expressing that gratefulness to the people in our lives.
You talk about social activism.
Yeah.
And grateful living as a powerful source of that. Can you elaborate a little bit more on that?
Yeah.
Please.
Yes, thank you. So when we're most grateful for life, when we're most grateful, we're super tuned into other people. Check it out. When you feel most deeply connected to that wellspring of gratitude, you are so much more likely to feel generous, to feel empathetic, to have compassion awakened in you for other people's suffering. When you hold yourself in this grateful way, you hold other people in grateful ways. You also live in, and that changes and should change our behavior towards one another. It's a big heart opener. I also believe that gratitude has been given kind of a short shrift, which is why I don't use the word gratitude a lot, that gratitude can be very kind of self-important, very hedonistic. You know, I've got all this gratitude. Gratefulness is that whole other thing that really is the gratefulness of life. And we feel, when we feel gratefulness, when we feel grateful for democracy, we're much more likely to participate. Gratitude is not it doesn't tamp down our concerns about the world. It's not a place of hedonistic self-importance. It actually gets us much more engaged. When we live gratefully, we're much more likely to, so think about it this way. If you're really grateful for children, if you love children, and your heart is swelling and overwhelmed with how grateful for you are about the gifts that children bring to the world, you are much more likely to want to do something to protect and tend and treasure children. I just got goosebumps, so I know that that's speaking truth. So for me, I treasure my walks every day. I walk along a river every single day. That's a practice for me. I get myself out into nature. I connect with the beauty. I have reverence for the earth. So you know what I do? I pick up the trash on my walk. If I love a piece of land, I had better protect it. So to me, grateful living absolutely mandates that we protect, treasure, engage, act, defend. It's not a passive, give me more reasons for gratitude kind of a way. It's, I'm gonna go create possibilities in the world so that other people have access to things, so that there's more justice, so that there's more love, so that we preserve the things that we care about really deeply from a place not of opposition, but of gratefulness. It's a very powerful motivator. It doesn't put us to sleep. It doesn't make us more complacent. That deep contentment actually makes us much more active. When we really feel that place of maybe I don't have to, I can get off the hamster wheel of needing more for myself. If I can get off that hamster wheel of insatiability and notice that actually there's enough right here, that I have enough, that maybe I'm the change that the world is waiting for. I'm, you know, be the beauty that you're looking for. I am all of that. Then we have energy to look outside of ourselves and to do things that actually make a difference in the world. And then that reinforces grateful living. Then it comes back to us even more when we live our lives that way, off the hamster wheel of insatiability, onto that path of this gratefulness of heart and compassion and engagement with the world.
That makes me think of some of your words around community.
Ah.
And the role of gratefulness in community.
So recognizing that we are only what we are, but that in connection we are so much more. In connection, we're everything. Alone, we are ourselves. In connection, it's the great multiplier. And Lynn Twist has a great quote, something like this. Lynn Twist is one of my mentors. I worked with her for a while. Collaboration yields prosperity. So unto ourselves, we can create a very limited kind of prosperity and plenty for our lives. In connection, we can experience abundance. We learn what we need to learn from each other. How can we be our own little generating machines, you know, all the time for everything? So in connection, we are each other's inspiration, each other's stories, we become our wisdom. It's our mentors, it's listening to each other. And it's again, knowing that it's not maybe the package you expected, but in community, we can be so powerfully transformed and transform. We are agents of transformation in community and in our interconnectedness.
Christy, I want to say thank you for coming to Rapid City, South Dakota for the first time and spending yesterday here, dinner last night with a group of people in our community this morning. You'll be on South Dakota Public Broadcasting today at 10 o'clock. And for taking time out of your busy schedule and your writing schedule to join us, I really appreciate it. One of the things that has struck me in the last 24 hours and in the preparation for this conversation is a quote from Brother David. And it's this, and I want to share this at the end. And it is this: if you spend this day as if it is your first day and your last day of your life, you have spent this day very well. And I think so much of what you have said is encapsulated in this.
Exactly.
And there are so many ways in which we can do this And I think, as you've mentioned before, as Brother David's researched, mainstream religions, when you dig down, they're at the core, there's something that's shared. And a practice of that is how we approach the day. And in that quote, it says that. We have a piece of artwork from the Susie Kappa Art Center, an art studio for all abilities. Linda Schaefer is the artist, and we'd like to present it to you as a sign of, to say thank you. And we hope it finds its way in your home or office. So thank you so much for spending the day with us.
That is the most so that is something I would completely pick out for myself. Oh my. Thank you so much. I'm gonna be going to the Art Center after this. I was so excited to walk by it yesterday, but I was late coming to meet Matt, so I said tomorrow, which is today. And so this is a book for you. This is Everyday Gratitude, which is a book that we published our first little book. It's a book of quotes. I could have opened them and read them to you, but I was trying to memorize them. But and practices and daily questions, and I've inscribed that, and that's for you. And when you leave, you're all going to get a little card. It'll, if you're interested in this, it's available. It's not expensive. It's a beautiful way to practice. I also want to invite you to visit our website. Please come. And if I can just end with saying, this is unabashed, but sign up for our Word for the Day. It's free. Sign up for our newsletter. It's a way for me to stay in touch with you. Watch A Grateful Day. That's the little short 5-minute meditation video that Brother David, it's called A Grateful Day. And some people watch it every single morning. It's a game changer. It's beautiful. And Brother David's incredible words are balm to your heart. It's a beautiful place to start your day. And Rapid City, I'm in love with you. I hope this is not the last time I'm going to come. And the Morning Fill-Up and the NUMAD group, I am so moved. What this community is doing, what this model is about what you're doing, you're a role model for me. You're a mentor.
Thanks. Thank you for making it. Thanks so much.